Welcome back to the Paranorm Girl podcast. I am your host, Kristen. So, ChatGPT has a body now, eh? Cool. Cool, 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 cool. It has been in the works for a second, but I only just learned about this development this week. So, news to me. If you have not heard about it, OpenAI partnered with a robotics company called Figure, which is only 18 months old, by the way, to create a humanoid robot, the likes and levels of which this world has never seen. Recently, they dropped a demo on Figure One's progress since January, showcasing this creation's ability to converse fluently when spoken to, respond to stimuli it gathers from its multiple cameras and sensors, in short, what it sees, and then based on its gathering of information and neural networking system, a literal brain, it easily and quickly carries out the task that has been asked of it or that it decides to do itself, based on the probability of what action should come next. Figure One's vocal capabilities are eerie and extraordinary. It says things like, and I think. After performing a series of tasks, it was asked how it thought it had done. It responded, I think I did well. It was asked to explain why it handed the guy in front of him an apple when he said he wanted something to eat. Not when he asked for an apple, but said he wanted something to eat while picking up trash that was dumped in front of it, which it did simultaneously without issue. It is self-operated. It is making decisions. Figure One is its own bot. And at the rate of progress its developers have made already, it is a matter of short time before it is a regular part of our day-to-day lives. And if you think that's impossible, commercial internet has only been around for about 34 years. The first smartphone was released just 30 years ago, and Facebook has been around for just 20. Massive advancements in a short period of time. Figure One is not the uncanny valley mock-ups we've seen on YouTube over the last decade. This is the real deal, and I suspect will raise a similarly interesting debate about morality and privacy and fear for humanity's future that ChatGPT brought about when it first appeared on the scene. Yeah, ChatGPT, that program most of us have at the very least dabbled with, while a lot of us truly rely on for information, for ideas, for our small business, hell, for some form of communication with something outside of ourselves. That program, a lot of people can't imagine a future without, and has become a regular part of our everyday lives, and has only been around for less than 2 years. I am not one for doomsday ponderings, especially in regards to technology and programs I superficially understand. But as I felt when ChatGPT was released, let's be hopefully cautious of a brand new era of possibility. But enough with the dystopian news break. I recently had the pleasure of spending St. Patrick's Day in Las Vegas. Caught an incredible mashup Celtic punk rock event that included the Buzzcocks and Flogging Molly. I did get my pasty. I walked a ton, walked way too much. Actually, me and my old bones were aching by day two. Did a little gambling. You know, it is Las Vegas. Like, $20. I mean, you know, calm down. I'm not a gambler, though. You know, it's just not my thing. But it was fun. It was fun. On the final day, we visited both the Punk Rock Museum and Zach Bagans Haunted Museum. Both places I would go again and recommend anyone visiting. Take the tours. Take them. They're well worth it. Now, the Haunted Museum was an unexpected experience. Mr. Baggins has accrued quite the collection of oddities and haunted objects, like Peggy, the haunted doll. The prelude to The Hands Resist Him painting created for Zach, the actual Dybbuk box, the devil's rocking chair, Patrick Swayze's tooth. Yeah, I still don't know how I feel about that one. But the most unexpected part of this tour was a moment, I dare say, I was affected by a certain haunted object. And it's kind of weird. I'll let you guys decide for yourselves. So, midway through the tour, we were all corralled into this, what looked like basically an empty room with some glass at the far end, kind of like looked like cloudy shower glass. And on the other side of the room, there was a TV monitor over there. So we all lined up in front of the glass. We watched the video on the TV as a pre-recorded Zach regales us with the tales and history of the curse of James Dean's car, little bastard. All of the deaths and injuries purportedly due to this car, the driving of it, the handling of it, the moving of it, just being in the vicinity of it. Okay. In the past, I have generally held the opinion that a curse or haunted item and its effects on a person have more to do with the person than the object or curse itself. I've always more so felt it was about the power the person gives to the object, how much fear the person feels toward the object. They already have to be aware, in some sense, of the object. Okay? This is an important detail to the story. So, we're standing there. Empty room. Everything's been going fine with me up until this moment. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, I felt like I was about to pass out. I felt things suddenly try to go black on me. My vision got cloudy. My whole body did this little, like, uneven tilt, and I jerked myself out of it. I unconsciously reached out to grab for Lee, and then it passed. And I was like, whoa, that was weird. Maybe I need some water or something. And then we are directed to look behind us as the light comes up on an object behind the glass. Dudes. Part of the friggin' axle of the cursed James Dean car was on display, not 2 feet behind me that whole time. Didn't know that. Had no idea. I had no idea there was even anything in there. The glass was weird. And I was like a glass wall. But I didn't think, oh, I bet that's a glass case for something. I couldn't see inside of it. I just thought it was like maybe like a makeshift wall or a sliding door to another room. This place was set up very strangely. So that's what happened. That experience has got me questioning my previous thoughts and opinions on haunted objects just a little bit. Just a little bit, I gotta tell you. But the whole experience was just fantastic. It was awesome. And it had me thinking back to the conversation I had with today's guest, who also owns a haunted house, who has also refurbished and decorated it with historic and haunted objects. If you have been in the paranormal investigation field for any length of time, you have possibly heard of my guest and read about her haunted house in Minnesota. Perhaps you have been there yourself. On today's show, we discussed this location, her investigation team, her personal experiences and evidence captured, and a brand new location she has only recently procured that is soon to open to the public for investigation as well. Let's do a word from our sponsor, and then I will introduce her. This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and the drapes, with the leaders and below-the-waist grooming. Clear out that winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Embrace the season and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our special offer. Go to manscaped.com and use code PNG for 20% off plus free shipping. How was y'all's spring break? Anybody caught that spring fever yet? Ooh, I have. I have been dying to get back out into the garden, back out into the yard. I live for mowing our lawn. I actually do. I actually like atrociously so love to mow. I don't know what that's about, but I do. I have the cutest little electric. It's got a cord. I bought it for $40 last year. It's adorable. So cannot wait. But upon our return from Vegas, the weather has turned suddenly, my friends. Almost time. Not yet, but almost. But let's talk about another compact machine, another lawn, perhaps some bushes needing to be, you know, trimmed up. It is spring now. And along with the spring cleaning, along with prepping your yard for a summer of barbecues and late night soirees under atmospheric lights and the beautiful night sky, we may have some cleaning and prep to do on our own overgrown and disheveled gardens. And it's easy with the right tools. Manscaped's fifth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, is equipped to give you the trim you are looking for. It has two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads that can help you accomplish that. It comes with the standard blade for your trim and a new foil blade to cut that grass as smooth as your heart desires. And it also features dual LED spotlights to help navigate you confidently through your most delicate and hard-to-see areas. Spring cleaning and caring for your lawn does not have to be difficult at all, gentlemen. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PNG at manscaped.com. That is 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with code PNG. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Fellas, I am so excited. Let me mow. So excited. All right. Jill Shelley has been investigating the paranormal for 12 years. Her team, St. Croix Paranormal, has traveled across the nation to visit some of the most haunted locations in search of answers. Over the years, St. Croix has captured some incredible evidence and were even featured on the Biography Channel's My Ghost Story for their capture of an apparition in a pub. Jill is also the owner of the Boyd House, a haunted Airbnb in southwest Minnesota, open to investigators and those brave and curious enough to check in for the night. She also recently became the owner of the haunted 1861 Masonic Lodge out of Illinois, soon to open its doors to the brave and curious as well. Please enjoy my conversation with Jill Shelley.
Let's see, I've always just been fascinated by ghosts. So I was kind of a weird kid. So that's how we started. And then I had my first experience when I was real young. Just kind of was at my grandmother's house, and there was always a room that none of us liked. And then I always felt really negative, like you didn't like something really was staring at you through the closet, didn't want you to come in. And her closet just had like a curtain over it, so there was no door. So one particular night I was sleeping in the other room and I woke up to footsteps coming out of that room and it stopped in front of my door. But my back was to the door and I could feel it staring through me, just like intense. Like, so if you're in a crowd with people and you get that, oh, somebody's looking at me, intensify that by 100 times. That's what it felt like. Ooh. And of course, as a child, I was terrified, so I wasn't going to turn around and look. And then it just kind of sighed and turned around and walked the other way. You know, then of course I threw the blankets over my head and was like, oh God, I'm not going out. And I don't, you know, I'm freaking out. And I could hear my parents next door snoring, so I knew it wasn't them up. And my grandma sleeps downstairs. So I mentioned it in the morning to my grandma when I got up. And she just like nonchalantly was like, oh my gosh, honey, that's just a ghost. He's not going to hurt you. So then I kind of was like, oh my God, I really want to know more about ghosts and things. You know, not that I wasn't into them then, but now I really got like almost hooked at that day. Like now I had to find out, you know, who they are, what they all are about. So I spent a lot of time researching and reading. You know, we didn't have the computer back then, so we just had to go to the library and whatever, you know, fun documentaries you could find on TV on your six channels. So just kind of with that, and then with the advent of the television, you know, shows coming out, was something that I realized that you could actually do that. And so I met a guy at work who was into the same thing, and me and him formed our group, St. Croix Paranormal. He's no longer with us, but you know, he was the base roots of that. And then we kind of stemmed off and got four or five more people. And then we just, formed St. Croix Paranormal and started doing some crazy stuff.
Yeah. You guys have been to some cool places. So how old were you when you had that experience, that first experience?
Oh, I would probably say I was probably around 8-ish.
Okay. So that just kind of launched your fascination with the subject. But you've been investigating, you were telling me you've been investigating specifically for 12 years. Has that all taken place with St. Croix Paranormal?
Yeah. We formed in 2010. And we just started out doing like local businesses, private homes, that kind of thing. And we did that probably for 6 or 7 months. And then we decided, hey, you know, there's places you can go to. Yeah. So yeah, our first investigation, which is things you'll never forget. We chose the Villisca Axe Murder House.
Ooh.
So yeah, if people aren't familiar with that, that's where, eight people, where it was six children, two adults who were murdered by an axe and they never found the killer. So of course that's the house we decided to try first. it was fun. I do remember I was pretty scared just because it was just the history and my first time at a really, you know, known, well-known haunted locations, because a lot of times you go to, you know, when you're doing businesses or private homes, it's not well documented. Sometimes there's not a lot of activity, that type of thing. It was pretty scary for me. But we did have, what spooked me the most too on that is I was up in the kids' bedroom and I was just sitting on the bed and the girls were like in the attic crawl space where the killer was hiding. And I decided to go in the kids' room and I was just talking, waiting for them to show up. And it's this old springy bed. Like if something sits on it, you're going to know that something sits on it. And then all of a sudden you just felt this bounce, you know, like something jumped on. I sprang up and ran so fast. I about took the girls out because they, you know, heard all this commotion. So they came out real quick. And in the meantime, I'm like almost running into it. It was like a scene out of a cartoon. But I went right back in there and said, oh, sorry, you startled me. But that was pretty creepy to have that on like one of your first experiences.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You, that's so funny. Like that reminds me of the ways that I've reacted. I'm not a paranormal investigator, but I've been on a couple, and like it's easy to be like, yeah, it's just a ghost. I'm gonna go in there. I'm gonna get all the evidence. I want them to touch me, and then something happens. You're like, oh yeah, Scooby-Doo legs out of the room. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. What a crazy first experience. But you guys have traveled to some really cool locations, like specifically, like I remember seeing a picture of you guys standing in front of Bobby Mackey's. Is that right? Did you guys get to investigate that?
Yeah, we did. We actually been there twice because they had a tour one time where it was this private tour. And so that was pretty cool just to see that. And then they offered like mini daytime tours and we were going to a different location. So we threw that in because we had time to kill anyway. So it's like, hey, let's spend 2 hours at Mackey's. So that was a pretty neat experience. We had, there was like the one room and they say that's a real heavy room and a lot of different activity goes in. I was standing there filming But then all of a sudden, like I couldn't move. Like I could feel like I couldn't turn to the left. I couldn't turn to the right. Like I was just frozen in time. Like I couldn't do anything. It was really weird. And then I said, "Get off me, back off." And then everything just lifted. So that was kind of a strange experience that we had. And then we did hear something. We were in the main upper bar, and there's a lot of times they say, I believe it was the women's bathroom, that they'll hear stall doors and things. And we kind of heard like the door to the bathroom open. Nobody saw it or caught it on film, but it made that sound of like the door of the bathroom opening and closing.
Do you think it is, from your experiences there, do you think it is actually as haunted or like evil as people have said it is on like TV shows? Is that
Oh,
kind
I
of exaggerated?
definitely. Yeah, it's definitely haunted, but as far as evil goes, we did not experience any of that. And that doesn't mean that they're there all the time. For me personally, I believe like a lot of this evil demons, that kind of thing is overdone, and it's a it they're, they do exist. Don't get me wrong,
Yeah,
they do
no.
exist, but it's a rarity.
Yeah.
So usually when I think a lot of people call the demons, sometimes it's just a crabby old man of like, I want you in my house right now.
Yeah, that trope is really it. Well, I think it was really overdone. I get to talk to a lot of paranormal investigators in within the podcast, and just like I've made a lot of friends in the field. And I think a lot more these days, they're doing really good about calling that out. Like, not everything is a demon. Yeah, sometimes it's just a grumpy old guy who wants you to go get off my lawn, you know?
Yeah.
Well, for the types of cases that you guys generally do, like, do you guys prefer a certain type? I know some PIs, they specifically don't want to do residential. You know, it's too intimate. It's too, you know, they don't want to go into people's spaces or whatever the reason. Do you guys generally like to do commercial or like the bigger locations to say you did them? Like, where do you guys lie?
We started out doing the residential, and it was fun helping out the clientele, but I think a lot of it was not paranormal that we got called out to. So a lot of time wasted, and with the energy, the resources, and of course that's what we're there for, but some of the things too that the clients do when you're there is a little ridiculous. So we decided to not go that route. We refer out to other teams that are willing to do the residentials. So we just kind of stick to more of being able to do what we want to do and how we want to do things. So going to
Yeah.
different places. We call them the pay to play state places. So
Pay to play. Oh, that's an actor term too. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into the Boyd House, because I'm just very excited to talk about this place. So like I told you before we started recording, I saw the documentary that you guys produced, that you produced about the Boyd House. You did a really good job, just excellent job of painting this picture of this place, including the history, including the things that are happening in there, experienced not just by you, but by other paranormal investigators. So it's like a shared experience. It's just incredible. And I hope people check it out. I caught it on YouTube. I don't know where else it's available, but I did see it. So that's where people can grab it. But let's just start basic here. So when did you buy the Boyd House?
in 2018.
2018. Okay. And then you spent some time remodeling and renovating a little bit. I think you told me you put up some like Victorian objects and like wallpapers, stuff like that, to kind of bring it back to its original, feel.
Yeah, we did restore it back to now. We don't know what it looked like on the inside, and even we've been talking with like great grandsons and granddaughters, and they really don't remember what the actual inside looked like. Just maybe some like this room was different. This used to be a bedroom, but as far as colors and things, they don't remember, unfortunately. I would love to know, but we did put a lot of our own Victorian wallpaper up. We furnished it with all like Victorian antique furniture. Yeah, so that can have some residual. We've put in some supposed haunted objects and
Ooh.
So just to kind of to liven it up a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Well, what was it about the Boyd House in the first place that made you go like, yeah, this is it.
I don't know. It just a feeling I had. No, I don't consider myself psychic, but I feel like I can pick up on certain things, more like feelings. And I can feel when things are around me when we're in haunted locations. We did look at a couple other locations prior to purchasing the Boyd House, but when I saw that on the, I just looked on the MLS. It just like called to me, like I had to, like I knew this is the one. And so then I kind of was really excited to go down there. When we were there, just waiting for the realtor to come, my teammate Donna was with me, and we were just kind of sitting waiting. And I just kind of said, you know, I kind of feel like something's looking at you. She goes, yep, from the attic. Wasn't going to say nothing though. And then when we went in there, you could kind of feel like something was there, but they were being real like far away, because this is, it's nobody's lived there for almost a year at this point. And then, you know, I'm this person coming in trying to talk to them, but we did get on the spirit box and woman say, who are you? And then we also had one of our REM pods, which detects energy fields from spirits, that went off in 8 minutes up in what is now what we've turned into the library. Mm-hmm. So we got a little bit of stuff, that I reached out to a medium that I really, really trusted. She told me some things that came true, once I purchased the house, and, so I took a leap of faith and I bought it, and it's just been crazy ever since.
Yeah, it is incredibly active. Like it's unbelievable. Would you be able to tell my audience, because I kind of want to share like the stuff that I learned from the documentary with them to kind of paint this picture, lay the foundation for the Boyd House and perhaps why it's so haunted. But can you share with us the history, like the previous, you know, from the original deed?
Yeah, so our deed goes to 1889 when the land was actually owned by the St. Louis and Minneapolis Railroad. And actually the train tracks still run right behind the building, or the house, I'm sorry, as well. And I feel like that gives a little bit of energy, you know, too. Eventually it was sold off to parcels. So the main family that I can go back to, we've had a few, but, you know, no, we didn't find really much on them. So the house was built in 1901. Fred and Minnie Eckert moved into it in 1912. And they were very well-respected people in town. So they all owned a fancier dry goods store. They sold like fur coats and high-end shoes. The town itself was a really big booming Wild West town. They had 500 people in town. That's a pretty big town back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, they had hotels and bars and billiards and restaurants, and now it's a dying town. There's only about 170 people in it. There's very little business. There's only like two or three businesses in town. But the Eckerts also were on the school board. They helped build one of the Lutheran church. He was the justice of the peace. So very, very well respected man in town. So him and Minnie both passed away in the home, as well as two of their children. So one was in infancy, and then one was about two, I believe, he choked to death.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and then Minnie also, they held her funeral in the house. Is that right?
Yeah, for 3 days they had it right. And I had, you know, and I felt that right when I was there, mainly, you know, because the way the windows are kind of that boxy square, mm-hmm. where they would have put a casket, because that's what they did back in the day. And that was like my first thought when I walked in. I'm like, I just kind of envisioned a casket being there. I didn't know she had passed away in the home. I knew nothing about this home when I purchased it. So all the history was gathered after I bought the home.
Whoa, maybe you're a little more sensitive than you think. Well, so you bought the house in 2018. Is that what you said?
Yeah, 2018.
Okay, 2018. When did you actually open it to investigators to come in?
I think it was June of that same year. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you got to kind of explore and do a bit of investigation just yourself prior to opening it. I was just curious, have you seen an increase in activity since you opened its door, since people started coming in, kind of introducing that energy, or do you think it's kind of remained just active as ever?
You know, I think it goes in spurts, because there's days when it's quiet and then there's days when it's completely insane. And I've had that experience too, where I come and absolutely nothing. And then there's days where everything's going off in the house and being super crazy and super loud. So I think it has increased because when I first bought the house, it was a good couple, 2 or 3 months before we were able to open, just because I wanted to get everything in order, and get furniture and such and get things ready. But we were getting pretty minimal stuff at that point, you know, maybe an occasional EVP, but we weren't getting any equipment interaction. And there was just one day I was in what's what we call the boys' room, and I had like one of those EMF teddy bears, and you know, he'd been there a lot of times and he's never gone off. And I had him sitting in the closet of the boys' room, and I was just like, hey, look, like if you're here, you just got to let me know, because I'll bring you presents. Other people's going to bring you presents. You're going to get a lot of toys, but you just kind of got to let me know. Like, I, you know, did I make a mistake? I feel like you're here. So just touch the bear. He won't hurt you. Kind of went over that. And then that particular day, that bear went on and off for a very long time, for like 2 or 3 hours. Wow. Every time he was just consistently blinking, then he wouldn't do anything for hours, and then it would start back up again. So I was like, okay, well, I guess they listened. So,
and then from then on, yeah, it's been pretty consistent.
Oh yeah, yeah, we get a lot of, and a lot of the things that we get are intelligent. Like they will, you know, if you're like, hey, back off from that, it'll instantly stop, and then you'll say, can you touch it again? Ways to communicate. We did find out that Minnie really liked to play cards, and so we do have a cards set up downstairs. And I actually got the idea from another team because they were playing like poker 21 using the K2 meter. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I'm going to do that. And let me tell you, they're very good poker players. I will tell you, they play really well. So we use the K2 as a hit stay kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there, at one time I was running a spirit box at the same time. And I was like, hey, do you want to stay? You want to split? What do you want to do here? And it says plain as day, we'll stay. So yeah, we've done that. And then, what was really cool is I had also, you know, we'd play poker. I'd put one of the cards off to the side, to the edge of the table. It was never hanging over the edge at all, but just right to the edge, just to make it real easy to push off. And I just said, hey, if you've really enjoyed today's games, I've enjoyed them with you. We'll play again, but can you just throw that card off? That'd be great. I mentioned it the last time when I went to bed at like 12:30. I got up in the morning and the card was on the floor. So I was pretty excited because I actually caught it on film as well. they had thrown that on the floor. But we do get quite a bit of different equipment activity down there in where we have the poker room too. So
Yeah. Well, you and other investigators get quite a bit of activity. Like I was listening to the reviews, some of the investigators are like, yeah, this is what happened, and I it's haunted, like this is going to happen, one of the most haunted places I've been in. Like, this might be a weird question or dumb question, I don't know, but why have you thought about why it is as active as it is?
Well, I think mainly is because they just enjoy being there. Mm-hmm. And they do like interacting with people. Now, I have heard several people say that there's a portal in the house. And I was like, I don't know. But I do get a lot of spirits that come through that do not even correlate to my deed, any reason why they're there. We've done like different spirit box sessions and such, and they just say they're passing through. The weird one, we were just there 2 weeks ago and we were doing an Estes session, and somebody was coming through saying that they died in a car accident in a blue Honda. And I'm like, okay, well, this is a current ghost, right?
Yeah.
Because they're taking cars. So then I said, well, what brings you by here? And she says, I found your hallway. So then I thought, well, maybe there is a portal here or something. So, but then also we got, this is so weird. We got Fred coming through, and cause we have a lot of evidence that Fred is still there. And he said that he was now helping the spirits that were coming through to cleanse their sins to move on. And he has a purpose now.
What?
So we're just like, okay, so yeah, this is kind of where we're headed, or what we found so far. But, you know, I think too, you know, having so many people come in and do what they do, and, you know, I'm not there to see. I mean, I say no satanic and no you know, these certain things, but can't, I'm not there to enforce that. And you don't know how other people investigate, what they do. Are they bringing stuff with them from, you know, another location? Just, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. 'Cause I have had a few people say, hey, we got the same name and the same activity or type of behavior when we were at such and such place, and we're getting those responses here now, you know. So I don't know if people are bringing things with them, or, you know, maybe I think just sometimes just doing what we do creates the energy to bring spirits with too.
Huh. Yeah, it seems like it's a spirit highway going through there. I don't know if that's portal. I've never really looked into portals like that before, but I have come to an understanding that sometimes locations, the veil is thinner there for whatever reason. It's just thinner and it's easier to pass through from what I've understood. Have you ever like looked at the ley lines of those coordinates?
I have not looked at the ley lines, no,
Oh,
but
I'd be curious to
I
know.
think there's a lot of limestone and stuff around the area as well.
Oh,
But
yeah.
also too, which would create a little energy, the back in the day, the Sioux Dakota Reservation line was just butted up right against the edge of town. So there, I'm sure back in the day too, there was a lot of things going on between the Native Americans and the people who came in. So you're not going to always find stuff like that written in the history books as well.
True, very true. Well, could you give us an example or a few examples of like what kinds of experiences or occurrences are people going to be more likely to encounter if they were to investigate?
Oh, I think the most common is like the hearing of footsteps or somebody moving around. That's a real common one. We do quite frequently hear audible voices. There's been several instances where I've heard voices. Like one of my memorable ones is I was sleeping upstairs, woke up, and it was just kind of a nice morning. So I was just like, oh, I'm just gonna lay here. And then I heard voices in the kitchen, and I thought my girls woke up. I'm like, okay, my friends are up. I'm gonna go down and say hello. And I go down there and everybody's still sleeping. Since nobody, there was not one person up. But you literally could hear the sound of two women chattering in the kitchen, because my bedroom is right above the kitchen and it's the old fashioned floor grate. So there's a hole right there. Like, I'm gonna hear what's going on. You know, and I've heard cupboard slam, you know, in the middle of the night. I hear it because we have the old metal kitchen. It's more like a 1950s kitchen. So when those are banging, you know they're banging. So
Kind of unmistakable sound. Yeah.
you'll get mostly, for sure, equipment interaction a lot. You know, the different devices go off, and the more I've been finding, I noticed if it's stuff that's real obscure or not frequently used, it's going to go off more, because I think they're curious as to what things are. Now they've, you know, you hate to, but I've been open since 2018. We've probably had probably at least 200, if not more, teams in. They know what things are by now. They know what a REM pod is. They know what things are. So I think when they see new things, they're like, ooh. And we just had a team in there last night that they had stuff that they handmade. So they had like a little,
Oh,
that I heard them say that they had a Jeep, because they were doing a live feed, they had a Jeep that they made into a REM pod, and that was going off. Well, they've never seen one of those, and they had a little bunny that they made into a music box. And so this is, you know, it's these new things that I think gets them. It's like, oh, what's that? Because otherwise they're like, ugh, another REM pod, you know. So
boring. Yeah. Well, back to the spirit highway here for just a second. So there have been four documented deaths in the home.
well, we actually had five, because we have another lady who died in the 70s. I don't think she's there because I've never gotten her name, but I think she just died of a stroke or heart attack or something. So nothing that was, violent or anything.
Oh,
But
okay.
yeah. And then I'm sure I've had a couple of psychics tell me that there's been more deaths in the house, but you're not going to find it on paper, because they felt like they were people who were sick, and that the Eckert family was taking care of them. And then they just passed away in the home.
Okay. Well, I was curious. The there I don't remember where I read it. There was an original owner of the house prior to the Eckerts. Charles Hatch, who shot himself at some point. I'm assuming it wasn't on the property, but you know, it's a pretty violent end, and he was like an original owner there. Like, has he come up in the captures at all? Like, is he there?
No, we haven't gotten that. He was more of the owner of the railroad land.
Okay.
And I know he shot himself in Minneapolis in his office.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. I was just curious. All right. So I want to spend some time talking about the other property. Before we move over there, though, I just wanted to ask you, like, what, in regards to the Boyd House, what's the main takeaway you want people to have about this place? Like, what's the thing that you really want people to understand about it?
Well, that you know, it's a good place for people to go and just investigate. It's good for beginners, for seasoned people. We do provide also some paranormal basic equipment for those that don't have any. So anybody can rent the house, but I think it's just a really nice, safe place to go and investigate. Even though we have a gamut of different spirits, we really haven't had any negativity. So I think it's just kind of fun for people to go and enjoy.
Right on. All right. Shift gears here. We're talking about a fairly newer property that you purchased. It's a haunted Masonic lodge in Illinois.
Yes.
This place is so cool. Like, I was watching one of the videos you were in there doing some stuff in there, and it's like it's not got electricity. I don't believe it has like plumbing, like working plumbing or anything like that. Like, it's an original bones, you know, and not, none of that like electrical influence going in there. So that might be really good for some investigators, maybe more seasoned investigators, to go into a place like that. But let's start here. When is this one going to be available for people to start coming in?
We're going to be open May 1st for people to come in and do investigations. We already are taking reservations. We're actually getting filled up pretty quickly right now. So I'm really getting excited for seeing what other people get there. Cause I've only, like we said, I just bought it fall of 2023. Mm-hmm. So before winter hit, I have actually only been to the lodge investigating 4 times and have had stuff every time.
Oh, okay. Well, when and why did this one come about?
Well, I always kind of wanted to, once I got the Boyd House up and established and kind of in better shape, because we put a new roof on, a lot of repairs and such. And that's kind of what pays the bills, is by having people come in and do the investigations. Mm-hmm. I was kind of always wanted a bigger building. Now, granted, Illinois was not my first choice because it's pretty far for me. But when I saw the building for sale, I was like, I just had to have it. It's like one of those things. Like, I know this is my building. It was really, I think it was all meant to be. This is crazy, but it was so hard to find. Like, I went through 3 realtors before anybody could really find who to contact to come look at it. Mm-hmm. It was, sure, it was on this MLS listing, but you couldn't get a hold of anybody. It was a dead end. It was insane. Like, but I found this one lady, and she's like, I'm going to find out. I'm going to let you know. And it took her about 2 hours, and then she called back. She's like, I got it. When do you want to come see it? So when then we get there, well, now we can't get the padlock to open. It won't open. So now we can't get in the building. So she's calling them and they're like, no, it is this. And we're looking at it. And if we get a couple screwdrivers, we can take it off. And the guy's like, that's fine. And, you know, because he knew we came a long way. So as my husband's over going to the gas station to get a screwdriver, and my realtor yanked on that padlock several times. I watched her do it super hard. And I was like, oh. So I'm like walking up to the window, peeking in. And I'm like, I really want in, you know? And I pulled on the padlock hardly at all, and it popped right open. And I said, oh, look, I think they wanted me in. It's like, what?
That's a sign.
That's what I said, it's mine. But yeah, we got, even on the walkthrough, I got, I couldn't make them all out. I got like 4 EVPs. Mm-hmm. Like 3 of them were super whispery, like so quiet. Like I couldn't, and I hate it when I can't figure it out. But I tried really hard. I couldn't. But I got one that says, I see you. And then there was a little kid just as we were standing outside the door, the entrance to the building, said, body. And it was plain as day kid. So I thought, Why are there kids here? Why would they? This is a Masonic lodge. This doesn't make sense to me. So after I bought it, of course, I brought toys with me, and I put them out, and just different things. And I put an EMF lantern right next to them, the Tech EMF. And like you mentioned, there's no power in this building whatsoever. And the EMF detector was going off with the kids by the kids' toys. And we also got an EVP that said, "You got dolls." So I'm just like, yeah, that kind of confirmed to me that, yeah, there are kids here. To for me, I don't know why. You know, like I said, I just bought it, so I'm just getting the tip of the iceberg on this. I just found out yesterday that the lodge actually started getting built in 1854 in stages.
Whoa.
And then the front part of it, where the pillars are and stuff, that got added on in the 1900. So I just found that out from the Historical Society. So I'm still learning lots, but my theory is because we've done some Estes sessions with the team and gotten a little kid to come through really, really well. And he talked like his friend was there, he said, and he said he had a fever, but he didn't say fever because he said he was hot, hot like fire, and that he had sores on his arms and he died and he's 8. And that's his friend Mark. And so we started thinking, I wonder, and again, we no confirmation on this, but we thought because, you know, the Masons and the Shriners, they take care of children. So we wonder if there was an outbreak of maybe scarlet fever or smallpox. And when all the kids get sick, they don't want them out and about with everybody. So maybe they congregated up in the lodge, and that's maybe where their hospital was. And maybe that's why these children are there. That's our speculation at this point,
Okay.
but we haven't been able to confirm that.
Okay. So has it real quick for my listeners. So definitely look up we'll give you the website at the end of the show to take a look at this place, but like just for your imagination to visualize this place, any paranormal investigator that knows about the Colfax Hospital, St. Ignatius Hospital. That is what this reminded me of. Like as soon as I was looking at the pictures and watching the video and you guys walking through it, like that's just the impression that it gave me. So if you're a fan of like places like that, this is going to be your jam. Check out the Masonic Lodge. It's really, really cool. Well, so has St. Croix Paranormal been the only team that has been in there thus far?
Yes, yeah, we've been
Okay.
the only ones investigating it. When we had, so it's been sometimes just me and Donna came by ourselves for the first couple of times, and then we did get everybody in, which is just four of us. And that we had a very incredible night. Probably the most active place I'd been in a long time. But we were like one of the main things that happened is that Teresa went in the kitchen to make a sandwich. And I and myself and the team were in the dining room, and those two were talking amongst themselves. I'm on the phone talking to my husband, and all of a sudden I heard this loud bam, and I thought it almost to me. I thought, did she just drop the cooler on the floor? That's how loud it was, and that's the only large object that's in the kitchen to make something, because it's an empty lodge. We don't have stuffs on shelves. We don't have anything anywhere. So I was like, oh my gosh! And then she comes busting through the door. She's like, oh my God, something just slammed something behind me. And she's like freaking out about it because it startled her, of course. So we all go in there and we slam one of the cupboard doors, and that's exactly the sound it made. And then, you know, we also went into the dining room, you know, and the door to the kitchen shut because it was cold. So we were just heating one area with a propane heater. And yeah, going in there and having someone slam it, I'm like, yep, that was the exact sound that we heard. And then later, doing an Estes session, we found out it was a spirit named Harold that did it because he likes to play jokes on people. So I think he was scaring Teresa and finding it humor in doing so.
Funny, yeah.
So that was pretty creepy. And then that same night, we were up in the temple area doing different things, trying to get him to interact. And there are two closet doors, one on each side of the room, and you could hear like the knob rattling like somebody trying to open the door. And at first we thought somebody was at the front door. So I go run and I go look out the window. There's nobody down there at the front door. And then, you know, that's what's like, oh, it had to be up here. And so we jiggled that. I'm like, that's what we heard. So, and then they heard footsteps Also, when they were downstairs, they heard footsteps upstairs. And then, yeah, we just get a lot of equipment interaction, lots of EVPs we get. And yeah, it's just been crazy. The Estes session was insane. Saying that there were Masons there. They're excited that we're going to fix it up. And they're looking forward to talking to people, actually.
Wow. So this place is shaping up to be just as active as the Boyd House.
Yeah, I think it's going to get more and more active. We've actually had people in town come forward and tell us some stories already. So it's kind of validating that something was going on prior to us even being there, which is good. We had one lady said that they came in and they were walking through the dining room and they saw somebody on their, a woman on their hands and knees scrubbing the floor. Didn't think much of it. Walked into the kitchen and said to the other ladies, "Hey, who's out there scrubbing the floor?" They're like, "There's nobody out there scrubbing the floor." And then they, of course, they go out there. There's nobody out there scrubbing the floor. Yeah, and some people show me a couple pictures of they just took a picture outside of the building in at nighttime, and there was like a green mist, and it almost has a body shape to it, just standing right outside the building. So yeah, so just kind of some fun stuff. Plus, apparently, the whole town's haunted because I hear lots of stories about other places and. In town, so
Oh, I love that. I love that.
it's an old town established back in 1857 or 36. I'm sorry, I just too much numbers. Just learning the place. So yeah, back in the 1800s is when the buildings got or the town got established. And I do know the lodge was one of the first three buildings. So they built three major buildings like that one, the commercial house, and there was one other house. That those all got built around the same time. So one of the first three original buildings in town.
Oh my gosh. What a great decision to get that then too. Like it's just so historic. It's like the bones, you know, part of the bones, the making of this town. You just imagine how much energy is in there, how many people have come in and out of there over the years. Just great decision. Good job.
Yeah, I'm excited. We're gonna, try and get some stuff back. We've actually been donated a lot of different Masonic books. A Masonic Bible. We have a shirt. I have someone that's gonna give me one of their hats. So we've been kind of putting those objects back in just to kind of make it homey. We did actually have a K2 meter inside a China hutch with the Masonic stuff, and that started going all the way to the red. Which, why is that going off? We have no power. It's in a China hut. It shouldn't be going off, but it is. But then we also brought in a an American flag and a Masonic flag, and we put that up. And they were during the Estes session. They said that they really enjoyed that and they really liked it. So
Oh,
yeah, we even did like the whole demonstration because we actually found a pamphlet. And then where they must have had a ceremony. So I have it framed. We'll be have that on display. So it just kind of had like different songs, and Grand Old Flag was one of them. So we kind of played that song on the radio as we displayed these flags out for them and put that up. And so yeah, I think they really like that. So our team does a lot of interaction stuff with the ghosts and things. So we kind of try to make it more fun and entertaining. We don't like to focus on death per se. We like to focus on life. And what they were all about, not what happened when they died. So I think that's why we get a lot of good responses too.
Have you thought of like a signifying name for this place? Are you going to stay with the Haunted Masonic Lodge, or I just imagine this is going to be end up being like that destination location, you know,
I
the
hope
paranormal investigators want to go
so.
to.
Yeah, no, we are going to stick with the haunted 1861 Masonic. But now I was like, oh, what a farce. It started in 1858. So it's
Oh
like, but that's okay. That's when they say it was probably completed. It was 1861. So we'll go with that.
okay.
But
Okay.
yeah, so it's I just love the building. I love the natural woodwork is all still there. That's super cool. So besides finding the pamphlet, we found a whole batch of skeleton keys that open up all the doors. And I just found that I was cleaning a closet and I was just running my hand up, which I would have never felt it otherwise. All of a sudden I heard ting. I was like, who's this? And hanging on a nail around the corner in the closet was a whole like 10 skeleton keys.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing, which was good because I had to buy a universal one because there was a closet that was locked we couldn't get into. So now I have the original keys for now, it.
Wow, what a great find. Well, in regards to both of the properties now, there's so much activity going on in both places. Do you think, or just from what you have gathered, do you think that there is also some residual events taking place, or are you pretty certain this is we're talking about intelligent across the board?
We get both. You know, yeah, I think you get some of the residual because you'll have like the footsteps and things like that. But then also you get the intelligent hauntings as well. So they'll do the interaction with you. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, really.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah, I was just curious. All right. So we are going to get to our final segment here in just a moment. Before we do that, I just want to ask, like, how can any of my paranormal investigators tuning in right now that are interested in checking out either property, how do they go about booking a night or more?
Yeah, so just go to our website. So for the Boyd House, it's boydhouse217.com. And the lodge itself is the haunted 1861 masonic.com. And it's got all the information there, the prices for you, hours, investigations, and our current calendar, what's available. And then you can just follow us on Facebook for either or. And also for St. Croix Paranormal, we're on Facebook as well.
Awesome. Awesome. And I'll ask you there at the end too, just to reiterate all that, and we'll get people to follow all those socials and all that. But let's move into our final section here. So I've got a couple questions specifically prepared for you. First question for you, what is your opinion on the theory that the living leave behind their energetic or emotional imprints while they are still currently living? Like, that it kind of ties into the question I asked earlier about, like, has it become more active since the addition of investigators coming in? Like, do you think that plays a part in some locations, kind of like a living haunting?
Well, yeah, I mean, we are all made out of energy and different matter. So we do put our imprint in every single day. Just certain energies are more imprinted than others. If you're having a very strong emotional day, or, you know, maybe you would break down a lot and cry in your bedroom. So your bedroom's always going to have that heavier feel to it because that's the emotions that you're putting in there. We've had a lot of people say that the closet in the main bedroom of Boyd House is very, very heavy. And a lot of people had said that. And maybe a year later, I found out actually somebody who used to live there was kidnapped and put in that closet. Yeah. So they robbed her, basically. They came in, they broke in her house, they tied her up, they put her in the closet. So a lot of negative and heavy emotion would have been had left in that closet. So that lady never did pass away in the home, but she left that energy there now imprinted into the home.
Wow. And you were able to confirm that happened, right, after you had heard from folks that, oh, this is kind of heavy.
Right. Yeah. I've had it. Even one psychic that said this. She's like, I just got a picture of a woman in here and she's scared. She's very scared, you know? And I was just like thinking spirit, you know, like a ghost or something. And it wasn't until like a year later, after several people have mentioned the same type of feeling in the closet, not necessarily woman, but just that negative, heavy, scared type feeling, that did I find that out.
Okay. Okay. See, you are psychic because you just answered my second question that I prepared for you. but yeah, just for my listeners, that question was, I was just curious how, like, if you had any historic mysteries or like unanswered questions or just things that had happened in the past that you weren't quite sure and then were later able to validate or confirm, you know, via the research or via evidence that, oh yeah, this did in fact happen in this way.
Yeah, we did have one too. That was, this was a, you know, correlating of how we confirmed something that we didn't know about. And this was actually a residential case that we had done. So they had called us in, they were getting some activity. They personally felt it was their father and their mother who, or not their mother, their father, and their brother who had passed away. So we kind of went in there with the mindset of that's who we were trying to communicate with. But we focused on that. And after I went through this, I learned a valuable lesson. But the lady went upstairs. Nobody was upstairs at all. She was sick. So she kept coughing. We were doing a session in the basement. She kept coughing. So she excused herself, went upstairs to get a drink of water. You can hear her up there just coughing. I got an EVP of a little girl that says, "You want a cool drink of water?" Just plain as day. And I'm like, whoa. So I sent that to them and I said, I don't know what that's all about, but this is a little girl, you know, and I explained it. He calls me the next day because he mentioned it to his mother who lives with him now and he takes care of her. She says, when we first moved in there, two little ghost girls appeared to me and I told them that I would give them and take care of them as long as they didn't bother you guys. Like, I didn't want the girls to reveal themselves to my children. And because they always wondered why mom had dolls in her room and things like that, and that she would be in there playing, and they thought she was crazy, they thought, but she was like really. So that was really a kind of a cool find, you know, to have that happen. Wow. Like, so my lesson when that was for residential or even anywhere, don't go and assume that's who you're talking to, because you don't know who you're going to be talking to, whether the family was insistent of it's my brother and my father. It was not. It was these two little girls.
Yeah. And yeah. It's on you as the investigator to you know, do that thorough, get that thorough so that you can confirm these things. And sometimes it's going to go against. Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, like against what you may have been told already. But, you know, that's why it's important to gather all of the evidence and then like do the extra work, go the extra mile to try to confirm that evidence, you know, or what you have been told, because sometimes history is written incorrectly. All right. So final question, if you can talk about it, do you have plans to buy more haunted properties?
My husband says I'm crazy, but I would like to do one more. Yeah, I don't know if I'll find the time. I keep saying I want to retire. He's like, you're never going to retire if you keep buying properties. So I would like to maybe in a few years, but we'll see financially where I'm at, what's going on. Like I said, having both locations, a lot of people think, oh my gosh, they're making hand over fist. Well, we're really not. Because we're putting all that money back into the locations. We get charged higher taxes. We get charged higher everything, insurance rates and such. So there's a lot of outgoing money that that even as I, when I first went in as an investigator, I'm like, oh my gosh, look, they charge this much. They sell this many. They're making this much. But now that I own one, I'm like, I'm barely skimming by, you know? So it's like, you know, to put the money back into it. So with the lodge, you know, these become like, and I'm sure a lot of the owners are, they become like your baby. And so I want to bring things back to the way it was. So with the lodge, there's a lot of work to be done, of course, building in the 1800s. So we do want to put a new roof on it. We do need to get new windows put in there. Eventually, we'll get the plumbing up and working. You know, right now we provide a porta potty for people, so at least they have somewhere to use the bathroom. We may put electricity on it. I am having a tough time with that because I kind of feel like that's great for equipment reasons, but I know a lot of people like it to charge their stuff because the world is technology advanced. So we'll probably get that. Now, like, it is wired for that, but I do need to get somebody in to do some work. Also, you know, inspect it, make sure it's safe. You know, if it needs a complete rewire, then that's going to take a little more time too. So I feel like, you know, getting the roof and the windows taken care of first, and then we'll start adding the amenities, you know, and that's only, you know, for an added bonus. So.
Oh, so much work, but thank you. Thank you for doing it. And thank you for providing these types of locations to folks. Yeah, I wish I was closer to Illinois. I would be right there. I would be booking my ticket now. All right. Well, with that, let's do one more time for everybody. Where can folks go online to learn more, to book tickets? Where can they follow?
Yeah, so Boyd House is the boydhouse217.com. And then the lodge is the haunted1861masonic.com. And then again, you can find us also on Facebook, and then St. Croix Paranormal is on Facebook as well. Our YouTube channel, the St. Croix Paranormal 2, you can follow that one. That's usually just kind of a combination. A lot of our Boyd stuff is up there. We had the video from the lodge, just different general places that we've been. So you can check that out for just some fun viewing, watching.
All right. And you're going to hang out here after we call cut. We're going to jump backstage for my patrons and talk a little about what we might learn about the afterlife based on the evidence that we capture on this side. But for now, take us out, Jill. Do you have any final thoughts, words of wisdom, or a piece of advice you would like to leave with us?
Just always respect is your number one thing. So respect the spirits that you're talking to. Also respect the locations that you're at. And you're going to go real far by doing that.
Paranormal investigator, owner of the Boyd House and the Haunted Masonic Lodge, Jill Shelley, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Kristen. It was great.
Thanks so much to Jill for appearing on the show. You guys heard her. Find out more about these two haunted locations at boydhouse217.com or haunted1861masonic.com. Go book them destination investigations, folks. You can also find out more about St. Croix Paranormal at the links below. Jill and I jumped backstage for a chat about some of the things she has learned about the other side from those who are there. We also talked about messages from heaven and one she received from a passed on loved one. You can enjoy that chat and many others covering all sorts of topics and questions my guests and I just didn't get to during the course of our regular episode over at patreon.com/ParanormGirlPod and enjoy early access and ad-free to boot. I do so appreciate the support of my patrons. Y'all rock hard. You rock my world. Two Saturdays from now, Beer, Booze, and Boogeymen will be presenting our third live episode. Ooh! This time, we are talking spooky AI and haunted electronics. It's all the rage, guys. Come prepared to celebrate, beverage in tow, and help us warmly welcome a very special guest, Interscare Sleep. Now, he has amassed quite the following over on YouTube in a very short period of time, and all it takes is but a moment of listening to the magic he brews up over there to understand why. I am not even joking. Mr. Interscare, Joey, Damian Gill, and myself, we'll be ready and excited to take y'all's calls live. Give me them haunted dancing toasters, TVs turning on when they're not plugged in. And I know my audience stats. I do. I know one of you out there has an incredible tale to tell about your haunted Teddy Ruxpin. I just know it in my bones. If that is you, please call or write in. I am dying to hear it. I am unrelated, but I was too poor growing up to have a Teddy Ruxpin. I guess it's kind of related. It could have been a haunted one. That would have been cool. No. I got that good dollar store baby doll with the one eye that would like sometimes open when you sat her up. Character building stuff, but still, submit your written stories or record it in a message to be played on air at ghost.beer or call in during the live stream. We look forward to it, you guys. Really looking forward to it. Follow the Paranorm Girl Pod on all socials at Paranorm Girl Pod for updates and announcements for both shows. And also be sure you are subscribed to the PGP YouTube channel and click the bell so you can be notified whenever I go live or upload a new episode. That will be a wrap for today. Let's do it again next week. Stay safe, keep the nightlight on, and sleep with one eye open.
Spring, is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. They've designed must-have travel styles for when you need to jet. The lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit make these shoes some of the most packable styles ever. That means more comfort and less baggage. Take the Superlight Tree Runner on your next adventure. Its cushy, lightweight foam midsole supports every step, and the extra outsole traction gives you the grip to just go for it. The eucalyptus fiber upper adds next-level breathability to keep you going all day. Plus, the Superlight Tree Runner is comfortable and ready to go right out of the box. So, what can you do in a Superlight shoe? What can't you do is the better question. And because they're super packable, the real question is, where are you taking them? Experience how Allbirds redefines comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's Allbirds.com, code SUPER24.